It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
Welcome to the MRCTV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner. Brittany Hughes is still out on maternity leave, but joining me today to talk about private property rights, something that's uniquely under threat in the U.S. Over the last few years. But there's a couple recent cases that have really caught our attention over at MRCTV. Gardner Goldsmith joining me once again. And you're actually in the studio. You're in the studio. We're both in the studio together, which is a rare
thing. This is a good thing. There is actual physical contact.
You've been
possible.
Up at MRCTV this week. I know you're departing soon. Not long after this podcast, but I hope you enjoyed your time.
Oh, it's been awesome. And the whole team is great. You guys are just really moving and covering so much stuff, and it's just seeing the efficiency here and the way you treat people is fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I don't deliver the beatings as often as I used to. It's just a matter of time. But speaking about covering things, you've been covering a couple of interesting stories about private property rights, and I want to touch upon this. And a lot of it is with these little businesses. I want to sell their business or move on or use the building for another use, and people are making moves to have the government come in and stop them. Yeah. And let's start off with this one. This is the most recent one. Mm-hmm. And this is Omoeba Music. Omoeba in California. Yes. I've purchased things from
great
Omoeba
spot
over
right in LA. Terrific spot all over, you know, California, starting up by San Francisco on Haight-Ashbury. And then they have one just not too far from that. And they opened one in LA quite a while ago. You know, they do great stuff on video. They have their What's in Your Bag segments where they'll talk to different musicians and they'll bring them in and say, what are you buying in the store? And you can learn so much about music and so on. And it's not like Omoeba's in trouble, right? It's not like Omoeba's dying or anything like that. Not at all. Great store, great place. They have live music there and so on and so forth. But the latest story from Reason Magazine is that Omoeba wants to sell their particular location in Hollywood, and they want to sell it to some folks who want to create an apartment building, a 26-story apartment building right down there, the Sunset Strip, beautiful location, easy location for anybody working in a studio, you know.
Well, it's not that LA is crowded or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
They're never looking for...
It's no problem at all. And, you know, everybody knows that if you're in LA, it's difficult to drive into LA. It'll take you a long, long time.
You know, it rivals DC when I've been there. I mean, they're both fighting to have the worst traffic, in my opinion. It's a constant battle.
I don't know whether it's
LA
a real
or DC.
Badge of
it's
distinction.
A back and forth battle, which is the worst traffic. I'm not even sure. I've driven both and neither are any good.
Well, maybe they'll just have to work on their potholes and that'll be the capper. Like, well, ours actually have more potholes. All right, you win. But there's something, and before I get to the specifics on the story, I'll just mention that there seems to be something in the mentality of some people, a little foreshadowing here, that seems to attract them to say, you know, I can control what somebody else is going to do with his or her place. And this is this mentality, and it's pervasive, and it manifests in so many ways. So
yes,
here we see
it. I need to have a say in somebody else's personal business transaction.
Exactly. So the story from Reason, and it was terrific. I'm glad they covered this one. This one came from Christian Britschke, and Christian does a lot of great work for Reason. And he noted that they want to sell their Omoeba Hollywood location for a 26-story, 200-unit apartment building downtown. I mean, that is prime. It's probably worth at least $10.
Or maybe a little more.
Yeah. And so it turns out, says, since the record store chain opened its Hollywood location in 2001, the store has become famous for its distinctive neon signs and murals and for hosting famous musicians like Paul McCartney. These features, the AHF argues, and we'll tell you about the AHF in a minute, make the Omoeba Music Building a significant, you know what, and you know what age is?
Historical.
It's historic, exactly. Right. And the strange thing is that the people who are claiming it's historic is the AIDS Healthcare Foundation.
What?
Yes, they're the ones who are claiming it's historic. I don't understand it.
Do we have any idea of what their interest is?
I don't know. Well, give a little more information to the listeners here, I guess, and let them know. Says that these features, the AHF argues, make the Amoeba Music Building a significant historic resource that the city cannot lawfully allow to be demolished without further environmental study. So it's historic, and you know how history has such a bearing on the environment.
Well, yeah.
There you go.
How does that work?
I don't know.
Hey,
look, it's imagination. LA is famous for making things up. Amoeba Music's owners feel differently. The lawsuit, they say, and here's the story, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation sued Los Angeles over its approval of the plan to redevelop Amoeba Music's Hollywood location. So the lawsuit, they say, is actively harming their ability to keep their record store alive. Using Amoeba without our consent in their battle against development is more likely to permanently close our doors than anything else we have faced to date.
Now, this is a similar argument to what we saw. You did a great report on this a couple of weeks ago on Tom's Diner.
Tom's in Denver.
In Denver.
Right.
Where there, it's a... He bought a building that was like part of a chain, and I guess there's some similar like nearby, but they want his building to be.
There is more than one nearby on the same street.
It was like White Burger or something.
Yeah,
like that. It was part of a chain, and he bought one of their vacant buildings and made it.
Yeah, it was called the White Spot.
So there's
burger
White Spots. Mm-hmm. And there's more than one on the same street, like you mentioned, but they won't let him sell. And he has retirement plans. He's getting out of the
business. That was his whole thing. His whole. Imagine you're a guy who's worked for 20 years in this industry, you're raising your kids, you have this long-term goal, and you're going about your business, you're gauging your entire plan towards, I'm going to sell this property at a certain age, I'll have time, I'll get this money, millions of dollars. So what happened was a developer expressed interest in this, and they were willing to pay him $4+ million for the property because they were going to turn it into a pretty high-level multi-story apartment living complex. And some folks, a group of five people, some ladies said, oh no, you can't sell it to them for that reason. That's not historic. This is a historic land site.
Even though we have another one right down the same road.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that particular one. So they have literally, the historic commission said, oh yes, absolutely. It can be considered part of the historic register because it's been around since 1967 when all great architecture was started in 1967.
Well, yeah.
Just look at it.
Yeah.
And they said it's also part of historic Denver and some pamphlet.
It's like historic J. Lewis art, perhaps.
Yes, exactly. That you could get perhaps 3D print art in a Spencer Gifts, and that's historic now, you know?
And there might be some of the first art made with a 3D printer.
There you go. And they're doing it again. Before this, they've done this in Denver. They have stopped this sale. This man's retirement plans are being destroyed. And they're saying, well, we're coming up with some alternatives. Well, it's not your place to come up with alternatives. It's his property. That'd be like saying, well, you know what? I'll tell you what. You thought you wanted to do this with your life, 18-year-old kid. I've got an alternative for you. I'm going to draft you and throw you in the military, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. My plans, they take precedent over yours. It's not your life. It's this guy's life. Leave him alone.
All right,
he's not doing anything.
Let me put my hair up in a man bun.
Yes.
and become a liberal for a moment.
I can smell the patchouli.
God, no. You just hate history. You just don't like history. I mean, if it's a historical building, why shouldn't we save it?
Well, interesting you should bring that up, because as I mentioned in the video, and thank you for remembering these
points. I gotta take this man bun out. It's constricting my thoughts. My head is hurting.
It looks pretty good, but it was stretching your eyes a little bit there.
Well, my hair's not that long.
But, you know, one of the important points to bring up here is that what we often see with these sort of moves, and I mentioned in the video that New Hampshire has this historic commission that they started during Gene Shaheen's administration, where they would dole out money they handed out money for a stone wall, to preserve a stone wall.
Because those are rare in New Hampshire. You can't come
anywhere
across
in
those walking in the woods.
Yeah, the woods have stone walls in them everywhere because they used to be farms.
You can literally trip over them in New Hampshire. They're
fairly
common.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they're preserving some stone wall. well. And so the whole point about it is about valuation and freedom and choice. And it actually does give a good lesson about freedom.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, the liberals will scream, you just don't like history.
No, that's exactly.
You don't want to preserve it.
No.
And that's what I'm saying. I was giving
right.
you a chance to give this
precisely,
defense.
Precisely, exactly.
And your argument would be?
The argument is, I'm actually making a greater point, which is about valuation. In order to show that someone cares about something, you can't force them. That negates choice, which negates the ability to show that anyone has cared.
Exactly. And these people have the alternative. And that's what they're missing is, like, get your own money.
Yeah.
Get together and buy the property.
That will show that people care.
And then start a fund.
Yeah.
Go on GoFundMe. We want to save this historic building.
Exactly.
It's not like it's never been done before. This isn't like an original thought.
Precisely.
But now people are using the government.
It's this
to make this influence that I mean, it's a manipulation. The owner of Tom's Diner, you might recall his name off the
yeah,
top of
it's
your head.
Tom,
but you know,
Tom Messina.
He actually pled with the zoning officials.
He went
like,
there. He said,
"You're
my
going
life.
To ruin my life. I have a bit. Either way, I'm retiring. I can't do this anymore.
Right.
I'm leaving regardless. Tom's Diner is done.
If it should get zoned, then my value goes from 8 stories to 1 story, and that's significant, and that changes my future plans, my kids' plans."
And he's pleading to these people, like, this is my life, please let me live. And they showed the ladies who had started this whole thing, and it's pure busybodyism. Now, in some cases, you'll get people who want to get the government involved with saving some so-called historical site, and it's sometimes difficult to sort of get people to understand where you're coming from so that they actually do understand that you appreciate history. Some people will use it to keep their property values high. So, for example, I know some folks who were able to get in a certain area in New Hampshire some land preserved because their land abutted that land. And by keeping it preserved and very pristine, that allowed their property values to go way up. So if they're going to sell their home, they've got this beautiful forest land out there. The people who are going to buy it's like, wow, that's a preservation area. And that increases the value. Or in some cases, they want a block competition. So they don't want something zoned commercial. So there's this term called Little Leviathan. This is the way that we can see, in particular, zoning laws are often misused. And there's a lot to be said for
planning.
This is
for
yeah. Well,
planning.
This is one of the reasons why, if you're going to have a government, you want to keep it small, because the larger the area of control, the more people you're going to damage. So if you take this idea of these small areas like Amoeba Music, whom you know they've served so many people over the years, and now they can't do with their property what they want, and you magnify it, you expand it. That's where you get national parks. That's where you get historical monuments, which, contrary to the Constitution, as I've mentioned before, the Constitution only allows the federal government to own property in places, and you've discussed it yourself.
Yeah. Well.
Military garrisons and Washington, D.C. If a territory that is controlled by the federal government enters the Union, they enter with all of the rights and privileges according to the Constitution of any state. And there is nothing in the Constitution that forces a state to cede land. And even if there were, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the federal government the power to run the land.
So if we get Greenland, there's hope to maybe rectify this situation.
Right, right. So this is the problem that, you know, the Bundys ran into, that people in so many of the Western states have run into. They're saying, look, this federal government land is being mismanaged. And you can see that in certain places, it's being used to certain people's advantages. So, for example—
And there's no constitutional right if the state wants to get involved.
Precisely. And if the feds want to do what they need to, at least abide by the rules that they're telling us they're going to abide by and ask for an amendment to the Constitution. Now, here in the local level, you've got various rules and regulations and things like that, but you can see how it's being misused. So imagine the forces that could be involved in misusing this on a national level, and then think about maybe some ways that could be changed. You know, why is it that I don't live in Alaska? Why is it that I should have a say over what happens in Alaska? It's crazy.
Right.
Now, at least in Los Angeles, this is a giant metropolis, so the forces, there are going to be all sorts of forces there. But at least there, I'm not messing with them. They're on their own. Now, the other thing that sort of gets me about this is, is the conceit that human beings have. And this is just a psychological thing that I mentioned in the video that I made about the Ken Toms in Denver. The Toms Diner story really, I think, exemplifies or typifies a human tendency that we have. It's the conceit of our own sort of temporal cage and our own preferences, where, well, it was there during our lives, so it must have historical significance.
Right, they have fond childhood memories of the building, eating there with their parents. And everybody, I can understand that.
Right, I collect.
But it doesn't give me the right to dictate.
Whatever it is,
Once I sold the house that I've grown up in, do I have the right to tell the new owners, well, you can't paint it a different color?
That's a perfect
way. Because that will ruin my childhood memory.
Right, exactly. Now, it's possible through private contract that you could say, okay, you will not paint
for X number of years. Well, if it was a condition of the sale, just saying in general, this is a thing to move on.
Right, that's it. And it's only if you... So what we have, what I try to exercise in myself is that tendency to say, well, it was so valuable to me, it should live on in perpetuity. It should be like Shakespeare. Well, look, if Shakespeare from future generations come down the line, if they don't like it, it's not my place to force them to like it. If they don't like the music that I like, it's not my place to make them. And I mentioned this before. I went to the Rathskeller, the punk rock club, so many times in Kenmore Square in Boston. The Rat was sold.
That legend,
it's gone. The history of all those great bands.
A lot of stuff I grew up around that.
Around Kenmore Square. I almost was stabbed numerous times there.
The Aerosmith Club, that's gone.
They're all gone.
Fenway.
Yep. Bun Ratty's up the street.
Bun Ratty's.
They're all gone.
The channel,
gone. And so in order to understand.
But it's okay.
Right. And this is one of the things, this gets into almost a metaphysical argument, but. And I mentioned this to you before off the air, one of the things that's so important to recognize is the only reason that the universe exists is because of the stretching of space-time. The only reason we have a concept of before and after is because the universe is stretching. And the only thing that can allow for new things to develop is for old things to die. That's the only way it can work. So if you had everything happening, there'd be no room for anything. You'd have annihilation. So in order to let these new things, you got to leave room. You can't have the museum holding all the old stuff. But you have to let people decide what is valuable.
And that's on the philosophical point. But let's talk about the bigger issue here.
Yeah.
And this is government, be it local or federal in many cases, and private property. And this has been a growing issue since the Kelo case.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, this is a big deal. So if we look at the power that the zoning laws take is, in a way, zoning is a form of taking, really. We're saying, okay, you can have your property, but we are going to tell you it's going to be run this way. Now, sometimes it's people who want to buy the property, and so there's a sort of sense of fairness in some ways. I won't go into the deep, deep abstract of it, but there's a sense that some people look at it and they say, well, you bought the property knowing that it could only be
residential, couldn't be commercial.
Right.
So now you want to open up an oil chain service.
And this gets issues. to the start of what you're saying. Even now, that way that some people look at the zoning is being used in a way that they're changing the rules right under people's feet. They're pulling the rug right out from under people. They're saying, oh, no, you could have done that. But now we've got this new thing about history, and now you can't do it.
Or worse, now we have a better use for the property.
Yes,
that'll
precisely.
Make it more worthwhile for our town.
Right. And
or our community. So
right.
We know
so,
what you bought it for and what you plan on doing with it, but we're just going to take it from you.
And that's the Kelo case. So the Kelo decision, if anybody is not familiar with the Kelo decision of eminent domain, occurred in Connecticut. It was a Supreme Court case. The Institute for Justice did great work. It was named after this woman named Suzette Kelo. I've actually met some people who know her, and she's apparently a wonderful lady.
And this is a case that comes up often in dealing with private property rights.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah.
And it's a disaster. It's a horrible story.
Absolutely.
If you have any kind of free market thought.
Yep. Yeah. It was in Connecticut, and the government in this particular city of New London, Connecticut, they thought that they were going to have this pharmaceutical company, Pfizer, move into this area. I mean, it was over 10 years ago. And so they decided, well, we're going to take the property through eminent domain. Now, typically, in American historical tradition, it's not necessarily written in the Constitution specifically this way, but in American jurisprudential and ethical tradition, the concept of a taking for eminent domain is that, well, if the government is going to take your land so-called for the public good, and that itself is something that can be quite debated, especially logically, especially if you're Immanuel Kant, you can do a great job debating that. it's going to take the land for public good, then it has to compensate you for some sort of just
really
compensation.
Initiated with roadways and things.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
The,
so
the initial concept,
right? And I have to give a caveat to people: don't forget the initial roads in the United States were not built through eminent domain; they were built by private companies. Thomas D. Lorenzo's done some great writing on this. You can look it up in a couple of his books. There's a video, lots of videos out there about this. Thousands of miles of roads. That's where Toll House came from. Toll House cookies. There were toll roads, and private roads would do a much better job in separating the good drivers from the bad drivers. So if you're listening to this podcast in your car and you're stuck in your car, just remember, you're stuck in a government system that puts all the people together, and that is the tragedy of the commons.
Right. So Kelo, you got to flesh out Kelo, yeah.
Yeah. So Kelo, the government of New London says, we're going to seize all these properties in this area, and we're going to do it not to build a public road, not to build a park or whatever, or a government building. Who needs another one of those? We're going to do it so that we can then sell it to Pfizer. So Suzette held out. She said, no, this isn't right. You're not taking it for a road. You're taking it so that you can give it essentially at a below market rate to this company, Pfizer. I don't want to sell. I just fixed my house up. It was a pink house. In fact, there's a movie called Pink House.
Right.
It's all about it.
About it.
It's terrific. And so she said, I'm not going to do this.
Heartbreak and the pain and the suffering they caused us. Those words fail in comparison to what those folks really did to us in that neighborhood. They destroyed us. They destroyed our families, and they ripped our hearts out, and they killed the elderly, and it was pretty bad.
All for nothing, too, at the end of the day.
You all know, for absolutely nothing. Yeah. It's a vacant
all
lot.
For absolutely nothing, but for us, it's their just dessert for nothing to go there. It's hallowed ground for us.
Yeah. Went to the Supreme Court. And thanks to a George H.W. Bush appointed David Souter from New Hampshire, my home state, it was decided that, well, we are now reinterpreting the concept of public good, and we're deciding that if the government were to take this land, our convoluted logic is that they would then sell it for a reduced rate to Pfizer, and then Pfizer would move in with the business, and the business taxes that they would get from Pfizer would be so much greater. It would help everybody, and then through the redistribution of income, we're helping everybody. So that was the argument, and now they get to this point where, of course, it is a taking. Now, the thing that I think is important to remember here is if you look at what's going on with Amoeba, and if you look at what's going on with Tom's Diner, those are takings. They're not physical takings per se,
but they're limiting,
they're regulatory takings.
Right, and of course the regulatory takings impact the sale value.
Exactly.
If you can't sell it and the buyer can't do what they want with it, well,
right.
then...
And this is where we
or
get
they got to work within historical limitations.
Precisely,
or
precisely.
That so, weren't there when you bought.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, if you bought it and there was a rezoning hearing and everything during the duration that you bought, but they wait until the moment the guy goes to sell.
That adds insult to injury. I mean, look, if there was a rezoning thing while you were there and it was years before you were going to do something, that would be bad enough. But the very fact that it's coming down to the wire for this poor guy, Tom, that just puts the face of the tyranny on top of this, the injustice of this. And the thing that gets me is this is where Richard Epstein, the professor, his work, this is a man named Richard Epstein, Professor Epstein, has written extensively on this, and his insights are very, very worthwhile on this, I think, for people to start to realize how private property can be infringed upon in so many ways that they don't really think about, but they could, if they really thought about it, attach a price tag to these things and attach an ethical point to this, which is these forms of regulatory zoning controls that they're applying, even if they're putting them on 10 years, 20 years beforehand, these are forms of taking. They're saying, no, you're not going to use your property this way. We're going to start restricting these.
Oh, and there is no limit. Recent story about a town in California, Sacramento, saying that you couldn't work on your friend's car; it had to be in a garage.
Yep,
only
certain tools that you would find in a real garage.
That's interesting. The limitation on tools was the interesting definition there. It's like, well, if I can buy it at Home Depot, is it?
What kind of tool is it? Right,
it's
right.
I didn't order it from an industrial magazine.
Yeah.
I went and I bought this.
Yeah. This is one of the things that if you look at any of these types of decisions, and I think, you know, sometimes you hear about them and it's easy to keep them disconnected. They're just little blips of weirdness that pop up. Strange stories of, oh man, the government was crazy here. The government did what a dumb thing over there. But if you start making connections to these the way Richard Epstein has done, and I met him, he's a really interesting guy. He actually signed my copy of The Law by Frederick Bastiat, the great economist of the 19th century. Yeah, it was nice.
Great book.
Yeah, great book. And so if you actually start to put these together and make the more theoretical connections, in the abstract, you realize, oh, wait, there's a rule here. There are rules that are actually being infringed upon. The rule is, whose property is it? And if somebody else is making an abstract decision about this and they're not in government, we would say, that's a threat. You're threatening somebody. Who are you to do this? Now, the government starts to step in, and they're using these weird interpretations of the Constitution, or they're changing the rules for these people on the local level. And Richard Epstein would say, hey, even those things where you're imposing some regulation or some zoning change, those are takings. And you know what? You should actually financially compensate these people for that, because now you're restricting their lives. You're taking their property in a different way. You're not physically taking the property,
but you're limiting the use.
That's exactly
right. You're limiting the potential. Another great place, you mentioned some great articles on this, is Terry Jeffrey from CNS News.
Yeah, Terry's
had a book called
work.
Control Freaks that came out a few years ago, and he had a whole section on Kelo and how liberals are going after property rights. But there's an interesting thing when we talk about Kelo and the precedent that was set and some ways it could be twisted in the future. And hopefully we're not giving any liberals any ideas.
Oh, yeah.
But you had a point when we were talking about this before the show. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's actually...
Yeah, I didn't think of it until
creepy.
It was...
It's creepy. It's kind of... You're kind of right. If you want to explain, it's a possible twist on this in the future because of how the courts have defined private property and compensation.
Yeah, you're getting right to it. So what Eric is referring to is I was just sort of contemplating. I was thinking about the red flag laws that are popping up all over the place, Eric. And as you know, I described it to you. And I said, you know, Eric, I was thinking about the red flag laws. And if they are willing to use the psychiatric profession to label someone as not fit to have a firearm, even though they've committed no crime, and they want to stop them from having a firearm, I started to think also about these buybacks, so-called buyback things.
Right. Well, it's not really a buyback. The government never owned the weapon in the first place.
Precisely, right? So that's just a euphemism.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And
it's ridiculous.
But the whole buyback thing made me think of the concept, the so-called just compensation thing for property takings. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Firearm is property. It's your personal property, just like your land is your property. What if some wily liberal decided, and I don't think down the line, I don't think it would ever float Supreme Court wise or with people.
It's that
sensibility.
Now,
right.
Yeah.
So the concept is, they could possibly float the idea, and politicians could float the idea. And who knows, 50, 60, 70 years from now, look what they did in Kelo.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
The danger is there because they allow for the taking of the property.
Eminent domain on this piece of property, and the property is
And
gun.
It's for the public good.
It's for the public good, and
we're
going
to take
give
your
you
gun.
Some money.
That's it.
We just have to do it because we know in New Zealand the buyback program.
It was a forced buyback.
Right.
It was and it was funny because the comments under the video that I did about the New Zealand thing, I was like, forced buyback? What is that? But it was a forced buyback.
Well, you have people out there like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
She's pushing for that.
She's saying, you know, they're going to, you know, they don't even want to have sunset laws for the weapons that she doesn't like, the assault weapon, whatever she defines that as,
yeah,
depending on the day of the week.
Yeah.
You know, right. Well, you know, and she's saying, well, we don't want them out there. So it would be a mandatory voluntary buyback. How is it a mandatory voluntary buyback? How does that work?
It's just ridiculous.
And they would prosecute those that, you know, if you were caught with the gun later, they would prosecute you.
It's amazing.
Even if
it's
you
amazing.
Owned it before they did this program and you chose not to participate.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about this.
That's kind of the same thing, though. I mean, you're really
precisely,
not.
It's precisely the same thing. It's whether, it doesn't matter what it is. Is it somebody else's property or not? If it's somebody else's property, don't touch it. Supposedly, the government was formed to stop us from taking each other's stuff. Now the government is the machine by which people take each other's stuff. And they come up with infinite rationales to do so. Whether it's historical Amoeba Music, supposedly historical Tom's Diner in Denver, we're going to take your stuff. Or we're going to take your property to preserve some stuff. And that's not going to allow something else to pop up. These are all the things that are unseen. These are all the things that you've got to allow individuals to decide, whether it's got to take down that stone wall because we're going to put in a kiddie pool for our kids. We're going to put in a new home. We're going to raise some geese there, whatever it is. Or Amoeba Music's going to be torn down because the value of the property is more for apartments. Then you get, guess what? People might actually value guns. And it's not your place, Kirsten, to say we're going to do a mandatory buyback. What other things would you like to buy back? My child? My life?
I mean, really, your thought on how Kelo could impact eminent domain and the property could be looked as an item. It really isn't that far from what you're saying. I know you're like, oh, it's a dark, you know, you don't see it happening. It would be a twisted way to go about it, to use the Kelo as
and it would never
your legal foundation to go and take somebody's gun.
But especially if you see the way they use the emotionalism of red flag stuff. And that stuff's slipping by people. They're letting it happen.
It's an important issue to keep an eye out. And of course, these property issues will keep you updated on MRC TV as we still don't know the complete future of Tom's Diner, although things aren't looking well.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the MRC TV podcast. Thank you, Gardner, for being with us.
A pleasure. Great.
Some worrisome thoughts. We're leaving on a dark note. We're leaving on a dark note to walk out on, but some deep thoughts to consider.
Yeah. You know, they're almost as deep as AOC's deep thoughts. How about that as a way to smile?
All right. Well, thank you for tuning into the MRC TV podcast. You can catch up on all the episodes on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. We hope you tune in. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you again next week.